Episode 3. Yes, that was very clever, you sending Liz up to TSRG with orders to say everything is all right, the doctor said.
You know perfectly well I would have done so at once.
Lethbridge Stewart looked up at him in cold amazement.
You? I know no such thing.
They were in his office, conferring on the means of getting the information on the electrocution victims.
You never do what you're told.
To protect my standing at unit, I would have, the doctor said. I'm not about to let a mob of protesters invade my privacy here. But Liz, as you know full well, will not. She's going to make a report in good conscience, and you know it. The brigadier leaned back in his chair and surveyed the doctor across the broad desk.
She has her orders, doctor. It's up to her to obey them.
And if she doesn't?
If she should report in good conscience and contrary to my orders that things are amiss at TSRG, then she will have earned for herself a temporary post at TSRG as an on-site observer. She shall have nobody to blame but herself.
Thereby making her dependent on you to get her out of there.
And thus much more cooperative, the brigadier said. I must rely on what is dependable, doctor. I want a toehold in TSRG. Sending Liz Shaw up there with orders to report all is well was the surest way to get her to make the commitment to stay on there and look into things. She'll do very well.
The doctor hesitated. Then he asked, what if there's any danger to her?
She has Corporal Boyd with her, and we can be up there within a couple hours. Besides, with half the countryside from up there, protesting in front of the unit gates down here, I cannot imagine who is left to be a danger to her.
Liz found herself edging behind Corporal Boyd as the door opened, but the young corporal made his face bland and slightly annoyed as he faced whoever had found them. A security guard entered, gun in hand, and Liz was surprised to see the black jumpsuit, black protective vest, and huge sidearm. He looked like a stormtrooper, she thought.
What are you doing here?
He asked. He had the automatic pistol pointed up, and not at them, but he was poised and ready.
The larder off limits? Boyd asked. We're lost because that tomfool of a security guard at the gate gave us bad directions.
We're the team from UNIT, Liz said. Doctors LeFranc and Schepansky are expecting us, and we've been wandering these halls for the last quarter hour.
Still staring at them, the shaven-headed man pulled out a small radio with his free hand and spoke into it, his voice too low to be articulate. He apparently received confirmation, for his manner became less guarded. He holstered the weapon, but as he slipped the radio back into his belt, he said,
"There's more obvious places for meetings than a meat locker."
"Certainly. We got lost, so we decided to take a tour. We're a little surprised that you slaughter your own pork," Boyd said.
"This is farm country, mate. Easier and better to smoke it yourselves. We have lots of little projects like that out here. Care to see the beehives?"
"No, we would prefer to find the conference room," Liz said.
"This way, then."
He paused long enough to look them up and down, and then he led them out. Liz was grateful for the sense of Corporal Boyd alongside her as they followed the guard.
Dr. Smith, please call down to...
"Yes, I was called in as a consultant for one of the TSRG incidents," Johns told the doctor. Johns remained behind his desk, seated, keeping it like a barricade between himself and his oddly dressed visitor. He did not offer the doctor a chair. But though his manner revealed some unconscious defensiveness, his voice was calm and professional. "It was puzzling. I finally had to settle on torture."
"Torture?" the doctor asked.
"Extensive charring caused by the repeated application of some electrified device, perhaps a cattle prod, supercharged. Finally, amid a dozen shocking blows, one of the blows delivered a deadly electrocution. Thus, the victim sustained shallow burns spread over the skin that did not penetrate far through the layers of skin. But there was one powerful touch that delivered a deadly electrocution."
"How closely did you examine the abdomen?"
"Internally, I mean," the doctor said. "The stomach, spleen, liver, intestines, and lungs. Did you get a good look at them?"
"I had a technician take samples, certainly.
You may read my report," John said. "My conclusion was electrocution, death by extremely high voltage. The heart was stopped. There was no need for further investigation."
"There was every need for further investigation,"
the doctor snapped.
"With no sign of ropes
or handcuffs, no defensive wounds. What made you think the victim would suffer several electric jolts without defending himself? There was no struggle, so the victim was not struck repeatedly. It was one massive jolt, a single blow delivered unexpectedly to the victim."
Utter nonsense. This cool dismissal raised the doctor's ire.
You, sir, are a close-minded fool, he exclaimed. Have you any information at all on the site where the body was found?
Outside the fencing at the TSRG site, doctor, why don't you take your ill-tempered conclusions to them? They may be more concerned with your opinions than I am. The doctor seldom got as good as he gave, and for a moment John's complete dismissal of him forced him to reconsider his approach.
I am asking you to think of other reasons that the victim may have suffered such charring. You had the closest availability of the body. Only you can offer clues on what may have happened.
Johns, a pale and balding man with spectacles halfway down his nose, glanced up at the doctor in the way a man uses when he shows that he is now getting back to work. He hunched over the papers on his desk and took up a pen.
I have given you my conclusion, doctor. You may check the documented information yourself.
There's not enough of it, the doctor said.
But I'll tell you this, your conclusion is wrong, sir, and your failure to thoroughly examine the entire organism after you'd made your judgment was a grievous error.
Yes, well, don't forget to close the door on your way out. Their uniformed escort led Liz and Boyd through walkways too numerous to count. Liz realized that they had passed through one of the connecting hallways that joined two buildings. At one point, the security man stopped and passed a card across a reading device, and as they advanced beyond it, she thought that a strobe flashed over them. Boyd noticed, too, for his eyes flicked upward, but neither of them spoke. They turned a corner, and suddenly the corridor before them had a wider look, with wood-paneled walls and potted plants that stood like amiable sentries every 20 paces or so. The doors had no locks on them and were flimsier than the sturdy, reinforced doors they had passed on their route. "The front parlor," Boyd murmured. She gave a slight nod. Obviously, guests were received here. The security man opened a door without knocking. His face now more bland and less suspicious of them, he stepped aside and gestured that they should enter. They did. Liz noticed the room number, 314-3C. It made no sense in terms of the other room numbers, but it made for a handy reference in this maze of rooms and hallways. A long conference table stretched down the middle of the room, and two women sat at it, one on either side.
"This is Professor Schauner Driver," the security man said. "I found them downstairs."
His voice put a slight emphasis on the last word.
"This is Corporal Boyd," Liz corrected, and she made her voice both haughty and annoyed.
"He is my liaison officer with UNIT."
Boyd's face showed no change at her deception. He simply glanced at the two women at the table with a brief, direct look for each of them. They both wore lab coats and had safety glasses hung round their necks. One had red hair and one had dark hair. The dark-haired woman stood.
"I am Dr. LeFranc, and this is my associate, Dr. Schepansky."
Liz had already recognized the red-haired scientist as her former research peer.
"It's a pleasure to see you again, Dr. Schepansky," she said, with a formality that belied the cordial words. "I lost track of you after I completed my fellowship."
This was a slight jab to get information, for Liz had finished on schedule, and Schepansky had been on an extension at the time Liz had left. It didn't work.
"Very pleased to meet you," Schepansky said in that New York accent that could slice bread.
But her tone was downright sulky, and her eyes were worried and suspicious. She offered no information on when or if she had completed her graduate study. LeFranc interjected herself smoothly into the quick looks back and forth between the two women.
"How nice that you have met. Dr. Schepansky has been ably assisting me on research here. We are very concerned about the publicity that TSRG has generated, Professor Shaw."
She flicked quick eyes at Boyd, and Liz saw a hint of great caution.
"But I was not told about your liaison."
"My assignment to come here was unexpected and rapidly arranged," Liz said, while Boyd maintained a stony silence and kept an even gaze on Dr. LeFranc. Schepansky spoke up in that grating accent.
"Sending an uncleared person is a black mark on UNIT's record for not informing us. We don't have to let either of you in here now."
"I beg your pardon," and Liz cocked an eyebrow.
"Are you working for the free world or are you not, Dr. Schepansky?" Boyd asked. "We are, and we assumed you are, too."
"Please do not become adversarial, Corporal," Dr. LeFranc said. "Of course we will admit you into our research facilities if UNIT has determined that Professor Shaw requires an escort."
Her tone of voice hinted that all of this was ridiculous, and the sooner they took their tour, the better. She turned to her associate.
"Dr. Schepansky, will you please make certain that the labeling machine is ready for any samples that they procure?"
Certainly, and after shooting a morose glance at both Liz and Boyd, the red-haired American left. Liz wondered if Boyd realized the irony of this last command and the incongruity of Schepansky's willingness to carry it out. In front of a peer, Dr. LeFranc had ordered Schepansky to do something that normally the lowest-level lab techs took care of, yet Schepansky had not evidenced surprise, nor had she taken the command as a rebuke. She had simply hurried out to carry out the order. "Dr. Schepansky has a wide variety of responsibilities," LeFranc said as she read the flicker of surprise that crossed Liz's face. "Some of them quite sophisticated, but we often have to make do on a limited budget. Follow me, if you please. You may take notes, ask questions, or even record your tour. We would like to lay all suspicions to rest as soon as possible. I will try to be thorough," and with a smile she led them out. They had to journey through more long hallways, passing doors that were numbered according to the meaningless numbering scheme. Boyd risked a side glance at Liz. They exchanged looks, and he deliberately cocked an eyebrow and offered a quick smile, a hint to her that he thought LeFranc was hiding something, apart from that atrocious accent. Then he made his expression bland and looked ahead. LeFranc led them swiftly, a single pace ahead of them. She was not really an attractive woman, Liz thought. She seemed to be older than Liz by about 5 or 10 years, and her brown hair, though soft to look at, was thin. She wore it pulled back in an untidy knot that was not quite loose and full enough to appear graceful and artless, and not tight and even enough to appear tidy. Given that she had a round, white, moon-like face, the effect was not flattering. Her eyes, Liz had noticed, were doe-like and pretty, but now they flitted sharply from side to side as she walked ahead of them, as though she thought it necessary to keep her visitors in her sights. But she walked like a military commander, and as her figure was also round at the middle, soft, and just a little out of shape with approaching middle age, the swift steps and rigidly upright posture did not work for her either.